listening to Turning Hard Times into Good Times with your host, Jay Taylor. If you have a question or comment about today's show, Jay would love to hear from you at 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. You can also send an email to questionsfortaylor@gmail.com. That's questions, the number 4, Taylor@gmail.com. Now, back to our program.
Welcome back to Turning Hard Times to Good Times. I'm your host, Jay Taylor, and I'm really pleased to have a good friend of mine, John Rubino, back with me here today. John is the founder of the popular financial website, dollarcollapse.com, and he is the author of many books, including one he has co-authored with James Turk, that being The Money Bubble. Thanks for joining me again, John.
Hey, Jay. Good to be back.
It's good to have you with us all the way up there in the northwestern part of the United States. I suppose it's raining.
How did you guess?
How'd I guess? Well, anyway, you're nice and dry where you are, and really glad that you could join us. You know, I was just talking in the monologue a little bit about some concerns I have. We have Alistair MacLeod on the show frequently. We have people like yourself and other well-known guests that are concerned about the dollar, about the direction of things in the global economy, about the existing global money infrastructure, monetary infrastructure, and concerned that the dollar could lose its reserve status, which I think would be a really big deal for Americans, even though most Americans don't give it much thought. I just wonder, my concern is that how do things get funded? And specifically, as one who invests in equities, gold and silver, exploration equities, mining companies that produce those metals, you know, where is the money going to come from if the dollar becomes relatively worthless?
Well, there will always be capital to fund good projects. What will happen as we progress from the fiat currency world to a sound money world is that the people who own real assets like gold and silver and farmland and energy assets and things like that will tend to have more of the capital, and the people that bet on dollar cash, bank accounts, bank stocks, other kinds of financial equities, junk bonds, things like that, they'll have less capital because their assets are not going to do very well, and real assets will do very well. But the total amount of investable capital will probably shrink because there's too much play money circulating in the system right now. You know, that's the definition of our financial system is excess liquidity. A lot of that liquidity is pointless and basically just fake, and it'll have to go away. So it will be harder to get things funded in general in a sound money world, which means low quality assets, low quality projects, you won't want to bother with. But the really high quality things, let's say a gold mine that has found an awful lot of gold in the ground, proved it's there and is getting ready to go into production, something like that will have no trouble getting financed because it will be a legit business. Whereas a lot of the things that that exist in today's world are not legit businesses, and things like that are going to be very hard to fund in the future. So it's going to be a a tougher world for an entrepreneur, but a much more rational world.
Well, we certainly have seen the financialization of the Western economies, at least. I would argue more than with China and some of the Asian countries, Russia included in that regard, I would say. But Alistair MacLeod points out that one of his major concerns is that the banks that have expanded their balance sheets, those assets are secured by financial assets more than by, say, material assets that are used to produce wealth. And his concern is that once things start to implode in the financial markets, as they are starting to, it would seem, that banks themselves are going to be in trouble. And in fact, he points out I think he's most concerned about the European banks and Japanese banks, for example. They bought so many securities, and now with interest rates going up, those securities are underwater, such that many of those central banks themselves have negative net worths, at least on paper. And so that would seem to be, of grave concern to Jay Powell and other central bankers now. If they try to tighten up, They could really, you could really see this thing sort of spiral downward, couldn't you?
Oh, yeah. The central banks of the world are in a box now that they can't get out of. And as you said, a big part of the reason is that so much of the wealth, quote unquote, in today's world is bound up in financial assets, which really aren't valuable. When they're finally repriced to their intrinsic value, they'll be worth a lot less. So if you're a bank, for instance, and you're worth $500 billion in terms of market cap, but most of your assets are financial assets that depend for their value on the fiat currency in the countries in which you work, and those fiat currencies are going to go to zero or something close to it, then your assets aren't worth anything and your bank is not worth anything. And that's the process that we're going to go through, where a lot of financially based companies are going to turn out to be, what's the old saying about standing on shifting sand or something like that? Anyhow, they're going to be on very shaky foundations. And as that is proven true, the value of everything like that will plunge. So yeah, you know, that's absolutely right. And it absolutely applies even to central banks, because their main tools for operation are a printing press that spews out fiat currency. If that fiat currency becomes a lot less valuable, they lose their tools for manipulating markets. Mm-hmm. And their function basically goes away. So we're headed that way. Whether it happens this year, next year, or 20 years from now, that's the big question. Because for us to be able to, to really make money from this process, we kind of need to time it right. And that's the hard part, because you can't really do that. All you can do is just kind of position yourself in the path of history, on the right side of history's tides, and kind of let those tides carry you along. But you can't know when it's going to produce big winners for you and when it's going to, like today, for instance, produce kind of a boring situation where you just kind of have to get through what the financial markets are doing and hope that they go your way another day.
Yeah, well, absolutely. I mean, we're looking here at the NASDAQ is up 320 points as we speak. It's up 2.7%. The Dow is up 1.35%, and the S&P up 2%. What's to be fearful, John? Everything is looking really good. Is this the calm before the storm? Are we in the eye of the hurricane now? I would think, gee, it would be nice to think we're on to better times again, and we're going to start to make lots of money just owning paper.
Yeah, we probably are in the eye of the hurricane for this reason. The Fed is still in that box where if stocks are going up, see, the crashing stock market was going to be their excuse for stopping their tightening. Mm-hmm. And that would allow them to go back to easing, which is where they really want to be. But with inflation, what it is right now, and it looks like it's going to continue to be high for at least another year, given what's happening in food and energy and other markets. The Fed will have to continue to tighten in the face of that rising inflation. And if the stock market doesn't go down, then the Fed, there's really no end to the Fed's tightening. So they're going to have to tighten until they completely break the financial markets. And it's not clear, for instance, what interest rate on, say, the 10-year treasury will do it. But we know it's higher than today's rate because the system hasn't broken yet. But we can be reasonably sure it's not that much higher, because so many leveraged entities depend on low interest rates that at some point rising interest rates will just break so much of the financial market that the whole thing comes tumbling down. So that's the Fed's dilemma. If stocks are up today, and if they're going to be up maybe this week or next week, then the Fed has no excuse for not tightening aggressively going forward. So they'll just have to keep doing it until the market tells them it's time to stop. And the way the market will do that is by crashing. So we definitely or probably are in the eye of a storm, with the other side of the storm coming at us in the form of falling stock prices and crashing bond prices and general financial chaos. And it probably won't be too long.
So rather than buy the dips, we might Might look at selling, taking a day like today to lighten up our portfolios might be good advice. And
Well, I would say that, yeah. Although, it's understandable. The buy the dip people have had that work for them for literally our entire adult lifetimes. So it's no surprise that that kind of attitude is ingrained in the market. And people see something like what happened in the last few weeks in stocks as just another buying opportunity. So what happens when you get to a really serious bear market is that it dips. The dip buyers come in, push it back up, it dips again, and it keeps on doing that until it flushes out all the dip buyers, until everybody who has been trained to buy whatever they're looking at when it's down by 20% finds out that it can actually go down 40 or 50%, and then they change it, they leave the market. And that is how real bear markets happen. So we're I think headed for something like that, because clearly the Fed's not going to stop tightening until either inflation goes back down, which it's not, or the financial markets crash, which they could easily do from here. So I think that's the next stage.
And as you've pointed out, and as you and I know, because we've been around these markets for quite a few cycles, actually. It's usually something on the periphery of the market that causes things to break down. And you've mentioned a couple of things that came to your mind. The SPAC markets. Talk to us about the SPAC markets and their failure. They don't. They were all the rage for a little while. I guess not so much so now, right?
Yeah, you're right. Things at the periphery are starting to break down, and that is how it usually works. The crappy assets are the things that people sell first, and the good quality stuff holds up longest. So you see the weird stuff breaking down earliest, and that's what tells you you're in the early stage of a bear market. And yeah, SPACs are special purpose acquisition companies, which are basically blank checks. You just give some money to somebody, and they promise to go out and buy something really exciting with it and make you a lot of money, which is, in good times, maybe they can do that. But in harder times like today, it's very hard to just take some money right now and go out and buy something that's going to double or triple. So SPACs brought in tons of money for a few years, and now that market has completely crashed. There are very few deals being done. The existing SPACs are collapsing. And another thing, not unrelated to that, but kind of still similar to it, is the NFT, non-fungible token. That's a kind of crypto asset, something that's a digital image of something, let's say, that is traded on a blockchain. And the fact that it's registered on a blockchain means you own the original version of that image, but the image is in every way identical to anything else you could just copy off the internet. So it isn't actually anything. But NFTs brought in a ton of money for a while, and now they're starting to fall apart. And the last thing at the periphery that we should probably be watching is stablecoins. These are cryptocurrency, sort of like Bitcoin, but they're made to have a stable value. In other words, each coin is worth $1 or 1 gram of gold or whatever. And they're starting to blow up. There was one based on the dollar just lately that this is a little bit of a funny story, but it tanked. It had kind of a run on it. Its value went way down. And the guys managing that stablecoin had bought a lot of Bitcoin in order to back their stablecoin. Well, they had to sell their Bitcoin in order to try to salvage their stablecoin, and that pushed Bitcoin down. So there was a absolutely horrendous couple of weeks in cryptos, and that's part of why that happened. So yeah, stuff like that. And then old style peripheral things like junk bonds are also getting whacked. So what we're seeing is at the edges of the financial system, things that used to be seen as innovations are turning out to be frauds. And the money that's lost there requires people to sell their better quality assets in order to pay maybe the margin or whatever kinds of debt they have against these peripheral assets. And the carnage starts creeping in towards the center. And so the bear market won't end until the stuff at the center gets crushed. And we're a long way from that. Well, not that far. I mean, big tech has gotten beaten up lately too. But there are still a lot of financial assets that are holding up pretty well. And it's only when what we think of now as almost risk-free, the tried and true blue chip assets at the center of the financial system, when they get crushed, then we know maybe it's time to take some profits on our shorts and start going long again.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Well, I don't think we're there yet. I notice right now the 10-year, which I watch fairly closely, the 10-year bond, 10-year treasury, it's almost up 0.1% today, to just underneath 3%. I don't know how much higher above 3% we can go before things start to break, John.
Well, if you really want to simplify your financial analysis, just look at the 10-year treasury, and you'll find out that there's a number on the 10-year treasury that breaks the financial system, because so much other stuff keys off the 10-year treasury. Yeah. You know, mortgages are derived from that treasury note. So let's say the number is 4.25%, okay? Mm-hmm. And you can just watch the 10-year treasury, and as it gets higher and higher, the closer it gets to 4.25%, the shakier the global financial system becomes. And when it hits that number, it's 4.25%, the system just breaks. And if you don't look at anything else and just watch that, you have a pretty good handle on how things are going out there. So pay attention to the 10-year treasury, and then, you know, relax. Otherwise, you don't need to look at much else.
Well, as Alistair McLeod points out, central bankers, once you have so much debt on the books, Japan is the best case of this now. You know, they can't really allow their interest rates to rise because they have so much debt. They can't pay the interest on it if it gets too much higher. And so I think that's the fix that most central banks in the West, at least, are up against now. And you just have to wonder, you know, how much higher things can go before. And then what happens, John? I mean, will there be another quantitative easing, or will we have a new global financial monetary infrastructure? Who knows?
Well, I thought the stuff that went on in 2008, 2009 would be the end of the fiat mm-hmm. currency / fractional reserve banking mm-hmm. system. And they managed to get themselves out of it by creating insane amounts of new debt and just dumping it out into the system. So, you know, I wouldn't want to, since I don't have a good track record for calling the end of this thing, I wouldn't want to call this the end. But boy, it feels like we can't do much more than this. You know, it feels like this has to be the end of this version of the global financial system when this thing finally blows up, which it feels like it's getting ready to do. So we might be close to seeing some serious financial history take place here. The end of the experiment, the global experiment with unbacked currencies that began in 1971, may finally be ending with a bang, not a whimper.
Yeah. Well, you know, we're zero-bound interest rates. This is the first time after 2008. Negative interest rates in Europe, it just doesn't make any sense, at least to my humble way of thinking. I don't know. I can't comprehend them any more than NFTs, to be honest with you.
Well, you can get away with that stuff as long as people value your currency.
Yeah.
Because if they'll take the money that you're creating out of thin air and give you real stuff for it, you can keep playing that game. But see, we're running out of that ability as inflation starts to really accelerate, which is, you know, inflation is just people saying, no, we don't want your currency at mm-hmm. current prices. You got to pay us more than we're now getting, or mm-hmm. we're just not going to hold on to your currency. And that's
exactly.
Yeah. There's a thing called the crack up boom that signifies the end of that process. And that, you know, people demanding much higher prices for everything they're selling is the early stage of that. So we're starting that process.
You know, the math just simply doesn't work. You can't pay more interest because everything is fixed on lower rates, and everything, sort of not everything, but more and more things start to fall apart because they're not economic with higher interest rates, and governments and corporations as well. And you just have to wonder, individuals are now counting on money from the government. Where does government get their money? Can they print infinitely? No. So who knows, John? But so the idea then to prepare is to get rid of this intrinsically worthless currency and buy things that have value, I guess, that have intrinsic value, right?
Yes. Well, the little miners, the exploration companies that you cover in your newsletter, The best of them are just going to be spectacular winners in the kind of environment that looks like it's coming. Because as we started the show with talking about capital, there will be less capital in tomorrow's world, but it will be much more sharply focused on high quality assets. And so the companies that you specialize in finding are generally speaking really high quality assets in the precious metal space. So if you rightfully love gold and silver and you want to own the miners, then the good quality miners are going to attract an awful lot of capital. So I think that personally, I'm buying a lot of the stuff that you're discovering and holding them for the end of this process.
Well, I certainly I am too, but I do have some trepidation about in the meantime before we get back on to rising gold and silver prices, because when the margin clerk calls, whatever can be sold is sold. And yes, it's true that a lot of the things on the margin get sold first, but it's also true that gold and silver always have a bid. There's always a bid on those metals, on those markets. And so a lot of times they get sold down early in a market as well. And I think we're seeing that. We saw it in 2008, 2009, gold got hit really hard. But then quite a few months before the equity markets took off, gold just shot up like a rocket, and it was a star performer. I expect the same thing will happen again. But again, things are never quite the same as they were in the previous cycles. And to me, this whole notion of Russia and China moving towards asset-backed monetary system, which seems to be what Russia is definitely doing, and from what I understand, probably making more progress than we're hearing about in the general media these days, that there are a lot of European companies that are finding ways to get their hands on Russian gas. So, who knows? But to me, we talk about the fourth turning. Could this be, one of those major turning points in history that mean that a lot of the rules of the past don't quite apply? I guess time will tell, but that's sort of my sense of things.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think this is a huge historical turning point. And the process of getting from here to some kind of sustainable thing that we can go forward with is going to be brutal. And we really need to be protecting ourselves on every level. If you're not a prepper now, the time to begin most kinds of prepping is here. It's time to start protecting yourself against very serious disruptions in almost everything.
All right. Thank you, John. We'll have to leave it go at that. And thank you again for spending time with us. Well, folks, we do have to go to break now, but don't go away. Kevin Duffy will definitely have some ideas about how to protect yourself in this market in these uncertain times. So don't go away. We'll be right back with Kevin Duffy.
Follow us on Twitter at VoiceAmericaTRN. Get the lowdown on guests, new shows, and your favorites. That's VoiceAmericaTRN.
Reyna Gold is a newly listed company trading on the OTCQB under the symbol REYGF and on the TSX Venture Exchange under the symbol REYG. Its flagship asset, La Gloria, is a 24,000-hectare district-scale property in the prolific Mojave Sonora megashear in Mexico, between La Herradura, Mexico's biggest gold mine by Fresnillo, and El Chanate mine by Alamos Gold. La Gloria has very high-grade sampling and is in the first phase of a 10,000-meter drill program. The technical team is led by Dr. Peter McGaw, co-founder of Mag Silver, and Doug Kirwin, former VP of Ivanhoe Mines. Learn more at reynagold.com.
Timberline Resources is a mineral exploration and resource development company focused on gold discovery in the world-class mining jurisdiction of Nevada. The company's flagship Eureka project hosts a significant gold resource and drill-indicated upside potential at nearby higher-grade targets. Timberline Resources trades in Canada under the symbol TBR and on the OTCQB in the U.S. under the symbol TLRS. To learn more about this district-scale asset with exciting discovery potential, please visit www.timberlineresources.co.
Have you had a chance to check out Voice America's online magazine and blog? If you love our hosts and shows, check out articles that give an even deeper perspective, plus topics about health and fitness, movie reviews, philosophy, business tips and tactics, spirituality, positive thought, current events, and even more about your favorite host. It's just a click away at blog.voiceamerica.com. That's blog.voiceamerica.com. The Voice America Press Blog. All access, all the time.
The business community's first choice in Internet Talk Radio. Voice America Business Network.
Have you become a member yet? Sign up now to become a member of Voice America. It's always free and easy. Plus, you get to take advantage of some great member benefits. Get unlimited access to millions of hours of on-demand content across all of our channels. Keep track of your favorite episodes, shows, and hosts in your own customizable library. Find out what shows you might be interested in based on your favorites. Plus, you get insider access with our newsletter. Membership gives you more. Sign up at voiceamerica.com and click register at the top right.
Think you've seen everything there is to see in online television? Let us surprise you. Visit voiceamerica.tv today for sports, health, business, and more on demand 24/7.
Be sure to like the Voice America Business Channel on Facebook. You'll find out about up-to-the-minute business happenings and get ideas from entrepreneurs and business professionals. Search Voice America Business or click the like button under the player and stay ahead of the curve.
Voice America Business Network. The bottom line in business.